Happy New Year and welcome to Seagull Eagle,
the podcast where two rivals meet, Palace and Brighton, the show where the only thing uglier than the football is the banter. We're back after the Christmas break and there's lots to talk about.
And it's not exactly going to plan for Crystal Palace. A pre-Christmas exit in the League Cup and two losses and a draw in the league. 11 first team players either injured or unavailable. I think it's safe to say we're in survival mode.
There wasn't much festive spirit at the Albion either, but thankfully the clock turned midnight, January turned up and brought us a terrible Burnley side, 3 points and the return of a true Albion legend. We'll discuss all of this and much more, because this is Seagull Eagle.
All right, Neil.
Hello, Andy.
Happy New Year.
And to you, sir. How are you, mate?
Very good, thank you. I've had a lovely couple of weeks off work.
You were telling me about this before the show. You went off down the West Country, didn't you?
Mate, we've been to Cornwall.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, we had Christmas at home with the family, and then we went to Cornwall for New Year, and they do some absolutely crazy things down in Cornwall for New Year.
Really?
I don't know if you're aware of this.
I wasn't, no.
It's tradition that in Cornwall, you go in fancy dress out onto the streets, and you circle the town of Cornwall in some kind of weird, crazy parade where everyone's dressed as anything from mythological characters to minions,
really?
To all sorts going on. We went dressed in 80s shell suits.
So just normal dress.
Yeah, I just pulled them out of my cupboard.
Yeah.
And then at the end of it, you end up at the harbour and watch the fireworks. Honestly, I'd recommend it to anybody. I mean, it's crazy and it's busy and it's not cheap down there, but it was wicked.
I'm glad you had a really good time.
Really good New Year. What did you do?
Sat on the sofa, mate.
Did you have a Jules Holland New Year?
Did a hootenanny. Yeah, love a hootenanny. Yeah, little cocktail, little sitting watching the fireworks and everything like that. Yeah, New Year's Eve, that was enough for me after Christmas. I had a lovely Christmas as well. So, listen, we've had lots of games to get through.
Mm. But before we talk about the games, Neil, there's something I need to talk to you about.
Because, oh, really?
For my son's Christmas present, we bought him a Crystal Palace Stadium tour.
Oh, God, really?
And obviously, it'd be rude for him to go on his own, being 13. So I felt obliged to, you know, tag along.
Yeah.
It was quite nice, actually, because it was all of the areas that we sit above. In essence, we sit above all of that kind of the fancy bits and where the directors meet the other directors on match day.
Yep.
Learned a lot actually about kind of the etiquette of the day and what happens, and you know that they have to, there's a bell goes off 8 minutes before kickoff and all sorts of stuff like that. And as part of the tour, there were two things that I think are relevant for this podcast.
Oh, right, yeah.
And for your ears.
Where's this going?
One of which was when we went into the away dressing room. Here's the thing. I didn't think much of the away dressing room at Palace.
Well, I mean,
basic.
They do it on purpose, though, don't they?
Of course they do. I mean, it's a porter cabin.
Yeah.
Right? It's a porter cabin. And when you walk in, it's a bit of a shock, actually, because it literally is a porter cabin with benches around the outside of it. And there's four showers, two cubicles, four showers for all the people. It's like a little, about the size of this room, basically, with you know, four little showers and two sinks and two toilets. And
that shouldn't be allowed these day and age.
I know, mate, it's actually crazy, isn't it? And in the center of this massive, big, empty room is, well, on the outside, where the players hang all their shirts and stuff before the game, there's one shirt from every single Premier League club, is basically what the club have done.
Oh, right. Yeah,
so to kind of illustrate. And there is a big bin in the middle of the room.
Right.
With a Brighton shirt in it.
Really?
Not even joking. So there's a Brighton shirt in the bin in the away dressing room. And then the other thing that is relevant to you guys, which actually made me really chuckle off, it was quite, you know, like that kind of, them moments in football where you're like, that's great, like, fair play.
Go on.
So when Brighton came to Palace, what was it, last month?
Seagull Eagle Day.
Obviously, we've got like a trophy cabinet, which is outside what they call the ballroom.
Yeah.
And the ballroom's where Steve Parrish invites, I'm assuming, Tony Bloom and whoever turns up.
Yeah.
And I've never really thought about it before, but they sit in this really swanky room. And just to give it some context for those of you who haven't been in there, it's that swanky that you can lean against the walls and it's like lying on a sofa.
Right.
They're like padded walls.
Nice.
Really, you know, furnished, upholstered walls.
Yeah.
And all that. It looks really, really nice. And basically, Steve Parish and the rest of the directors were inviting Brighton to entertain them, and they felt like it would be wrong for Brighton to come to Palace and have a nice sit-down meal, you know, at halftime and all the other bits and pieces without seeing what it was like to be in such close proximity to silverware. So they took the FA Cup and the Community Shield out of the trophy cabinet and have put it bang in the middle of the director's suite.
Just for when Brighton had turned up.
Just for when Brighton turned up. And then they've decided to leave it there ever since. So now there's this poor bloke who's now not stood next to the trophy cabinet. He stood in the middle of the director's lounge with his white gloves on, looking like he's about to kill someone.
Look, I'm not going to get annoyed by it. If I'd won the FA Cup and the Charity Shield, I'd be doing exactly the same thing.
Don't you think it's really funny? They literally put it right next to where the directors of Brighton
sit. I don't blame them. That is cool.
And it obviously backfired because we didn't even win that game, did we?
I'm glad you had a good day out, though.
No, it was really good, honestly. And for those of you who are Palace fans here and have thought about it, do it. It was really cheap. It was like 20-something pounds to go and do that each. Really good. Oh, and Neil, one other highlight of that day, we got to park in Glasner's parking space.
Well, I mean, it'll be empty next season anyway, so...
Well, yeah, maybe this season. Let's talk about that later. But yeah, it was a full day, I guess is probably the best way to describe this, of things that we're not allowed to do that we just did.
It's very nice. I'm glad you had a good day out. Great. I really am. And please get the shirt out of the bin, though. That's just not nice. Listen, we've got so many games to get through. We're not going to be able to do our normal reviews of all the different games. So what I thought we'd do is we'll leave this weekend's games for a minute because they're the most fresh in the mind. Let's just go back in time a little bit and just do a quick summary of how our Christmas festive periods went for both sides. Why don't you boys start first with the Arsenal game in the League Cup you had, didn't you, first of all? And then you had two Premier League games over the festive period.
Yeah, I think our festive period could probably be summed up best by less about, you know, the joy of Santa Claus visiting, more about the Grinch ruining the day, is the truth of the matter. Arsenal 1, Crystal Palace 1. I'm taking that as a draw.
Can I do that? I get you. Full time, yes.
Yeah, I'm taking it as a draw with obviously the best team in the league at the moment. It was the Carabao Cup quarterfinal. The replay of the exact same game, the exact same time, in the exact same stadium as last year, and ultimately the same result at the end of it. We didn't win, but it was an exciting game and I did watch it and the whole family were there. I mean, I was absolutely beside myself. I couldn't, you know, like that feeling when you watch England on a penalty shootout and you're just like, I don't know what to do with myself. That's how this got for me.
The thing, I watched a little bit of it. So obviously Arsenal went one up and then they were mostly as expected, sort of taking control of the game, but Palace had their opportunities, obviously.
First half, we weren't very good at all.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I turned over to watch it for the last sort of 10 minutes, thinking, oh, I'm going to watch Arsenal win here. Mm. And then obviously Palace pop up with a late equaliser. And then it goes to penalties. And to be honest, I thought it was a really good penalty shootout. Everyone that took penalties was really good. Obviously, apart from the moment where you missed. But my point being,
we didn't miss, though. That's the thing to mention. He didn't miss. He actually took a good penalty, but the keeper picked the right way.
Who was it that missed the final one in the end?
Lacroix.
Ironically,
he's also the guy that scored for Arsenal. he had a nightmare, and it's such a shame because out of all the people on that pitch, he's the one that has been so consistent.
Yeah.
So he's that guy, isn't he? He's that guy at school that never gets a detention and then gets expelled for the first thing he's done. Yeah. That kind of thing, you know? It was a real shame.
It was a shame. I thought Walter Benitez as well, to be fair to you, I thought he was very good on the night. There was a couple of saves that he pulled out. You know, there were some good performances. The only thing I did notice as well was Chris Richards, when he went down with this strange sort of injury, it looked like, or a cut to his foot. What actually happened with that in the end?
It was really weird. I think it was either a stamp or came into contact with another player whilst they were jumping. But I watched that replay five or six times.
There's nothing on it, is there?
Not work it out what actually happened. I think the camera angles obviously, you know, didn't help with that. But yeah, I mean, there was genuine blood.
It was a very strange thing.
He's going to be out for a little while, one would think. Yeah. You mentioned about Walter Benitez. Mm. Obviously, he's our second choice keeper. Not an amateur, though, by any means, and he did. He had an absolute cracking game and he kept us in that and got us to the penalty shootout and then ironically didn't touch a ball in the penalty shootout when we had probably the best person sat on the bench who might have actually done that. But I don't think there's any person or any manager that could have, within their right mind, subbed that keeper off after getting us to that situation.
Apart from Louis van Gaal, that's about the only person that ever does it. But Palace, they went out to Arsenal. No big surprise. They fought their best. Long penalty shootout. They did well, but we moved on to the Premier League. And then you had, who was the next game?
It was Tottenham.
Tottenham, that's right.
It was at home. And obviously, Tottenham beat us 1-0. It was on the 28th.
This was a boring game.
Yeah, I mean, look, we controlled large parts of that game, and I think we were undone by what is going to be a theme of this podcast, which is that it was set pieces that did us over again. I mean, it's turning into a little bit of an embarrassment for us from a team that used to be rather good at them, to be honest with you. Ironically, again, very Palace-y. Goal scored by Archie Gray, that prolific goal scorer who scored his first senior goal.
Oh, bless him, though. He was so happy. Bless him.
Yeah, but I mean, again, it was like, you just saw it coming. It was like, the ball goes into the box.
It was a mess.
Header from a corner. But anyway, another game with lots of missed chances, especially in the first half. Again, that's another theme for us, which is that every single time that ball's in the box and we, you know, it muck up the last touch or it goes wide, you go, we're going to regret that later.
Yeah.
I think our inability to take control of the key moments in the game, I think it feels a bit unlucky, that Tottenham game, that we didn't kind of, I don't know, we had so much pressure, we didn't get anything out of it.
You didn't even look like you were going to score, though. But to be fair, Tottenham didn't look like they were going to score. I would have bet on a 0-0. It was such a scrappy goal in the first place that Tottenham scored. Yeah. But then after that, the game just didn't really happen, did it?
Well, there were moments of encouraging attacking play from us. There were opportunities to score, but I think, just mate, all of this is about narrow margins, isn't it?
Yeah.
Narrow margins of the Premier League.
Oh, yeah, don't tell Fabian that. That's all he uses all the time.
I mean, look, Spurs took the 3 points. I think lots of VAR interventions, and this is what got me through this game, was Richarlison's face after spending 20 minutes celebrating a goal away from home and then getting it ruled out was just brilliant for me, because you know, every Palace fan was like, get up, idiot. Go back. We've started again.
So listen, you finish 20, gets to 28th of December, you lose 1-0 to Tottenham, and then we move on to the next game, which is the last game of Christmas period, you could argue, I suppose. January, New Year's Day, Fulham. At home again.
At home again, yeah.
Come on, cheer up, Andy. Come on.
Well, I mean,
talk me through it.
This is the only point we've had in the league for a while, so I guess I've got to be cheery. First game of 2026. Look, we took the lead in 39 minutes, and again, very un-Palace-y, actually, these days. Mateta scored.
Yeah.
And it was a lovely cross from Klein.
It was.
He got on it, and it was lovely to see him score again. Genuinely.
Just an open play goal, wasn't it?
Exactly.
That's the thing.
Like, and it just felt a bit like, okay, are we back a bit here? Is this good? I think we arguably had the better first half chances overall. And obviously, Leno was making some brilliant saves for Fulham throughout it, so he was keeping it. He was keeping them in it. I think, obviously, in the second half, Fulham genuinely did grow into that game. They hit the woodwork.
Yeah.
Was it Jimenez header? And then, obviously, Kearney equalised for Fulham in the 80th minute, and it wasn't like no one saw that coming. It was very much like waiting for that to happen.
Well, I think
it was actually a nice goal.
It was, and I think with Fulham as well, they've come into form, haven't they? We've gone the other way. Like, both Brighton and Palace have lost a bit of form, whereas Fulham, I think they're something like unbeaten now in their last five games. They've had 3 wins, 2 draws. You know, they're really rocketing at the moment. So it was a surprise that Fulham didn't do too much in the first half, but they definitely came back into it in the second half.
Oh, they came back into it. And then, you know, this sort of stuff is happening to us on a weekly basis now. You know, it's like, if my favourite line, which is, you know, can't make that up, you can't write it. It's like, Lacroix had that effort cleared off the line. Did you see that?
Yeah.
And who was on the line clearing it away?
It was Gay, wasn't it?
Defending the wrong box. And you just can't make it up. And this is the point, which is that we seem to be bad in both boxes at the moment for various reasons, but we seem to be inept at defending set pieces. And when that calamitous ball comes in the box, everyone's hacking at it, but no one actually gets it. And then it's the same can be said for the other box, which is we're getting the ball in there, we're getting it in, and then the strangest of things just keep happening to us.
Well, look,
like the fact that Gaye clears it off the opposition line. Yeah.
Well, look.
There you go.
Well, no. I mean, this is the thing, isn't it? So you did get a point out of that game. You held on for a point, but you're quite right. The sort of the nagging reoccurrence of set piece goals and things like that. And then we move on to, well, this weekend, we're...
But there's, I'll talk about it. There's very good reasons for it. And I talked in the intro about Palace being in survival mode.
Yeah.
And we genuinely are, Neil. We're in survival mode. I mean, with to kind of summarise, Sarr, AFCON, Kamada, 8 to 10 weeks out. Munez, knee injury, 4 to 6 weeks out. Richard, foot injury, mid-January. Lerma, head injury, should be back for the FA Cup game. And Nketiah, thigh injury, back, dunno. Klein, now hip, groin, no news on how long. Jeez. You add that to Cardinez, Riyad, Kapore and Decore. And then he rhymed.
Yeah.
Then that's 11 players. That's 11 players that are out.
Yeah.
And then you add into the fact that then we've got a squad where there's 4 or 5 players that Glasner just won't play and are going to go anyway.
Yeah.
This is why we have a bench full of 16-year-olds and 17-year-olds. And we haven't, believe it or not, I did some research for this podcast, our actual squad number. Do you know how many people we've got in our squad?
Well, officially, you should have a 25-man squad and then new team.
Well, there's 29 players,
right?
29 first-team players.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah,
excluding youth team.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
And that is, everyone keeps saying, you know, one of the smallest squads in the league. It's actually not. It's actually kind of in just below the top third in terms of squad size.
Yeah. It's just that Glasner doesn't play them.
Well, it's because clearly half of them were signed and they're just not good enough.
Right.
And we'll talk about some of them that are potentially going to leave. But this is the issue, which is that we've got people who are being linked to go out, but we've got 11 out already. You know, vast amounts of people have got to come through that door in the next couple of weeks.
Well, we'll talk about transfers in a minute. Let's talk about the Newcastle game before we start talking about my beloved Brighton, right?
Okay.
So this weekend, Newcastle 2, Crystal Palace 0. It's on the Sunday afternoon.
A flattering scoreline, mate.
Was it? Ah, oh, okay.
I think so.
I'm glad you said that. Okay.
I think it's an incredibly flattering scoreline. 0-0 would have... I think 0-0... I'm not claiming we should have won this. 0-0 would have, I think, been a fairer scoreline.
Because there wasn't that many chances, was there?
No. I do think they got away with that. I think they got away with that. It was one of them games where it's a cursed place for us to go.
Is it?
Oh, mate, it's a horrible place for us to go.
Okay.
I think, didn't they beat us? Was it 5-0? 4-0 or something like that in previous... I've probably got that the wrong way around, but we do not do well up at Newcastle.
Okay.
So yeah, 13th match in 43 days, ended in a 2-0 defeat. Obviously, Brendan Johnson, we'll talk about him later, he made his debut, club record sign-in. Mm. He started the match, saw nice moments of play from him, but bearing in mind, he only had a few hours.
I was going to say
4 hours on the training pitch.
You can't expect too much, and he's been there a day before.
Especially when we play such a complex system.
Yeah, I agree.
And the fact that he's been warming the bench for Tottenham, he was a bit off the pace. And unfortunately for Johnson, he was the one that let his marker go for that first goal.
I saw that. Yeah.
So again, that's all about knowing the system. But I thought we started quite brightly, and I think we created loads of early chances. I mean, an example of that was Hughes' effort after Johnson's involvement early on. That could have, again, it's another could have, should have, but we should have been up. And then obviously Newcastle had their goal ruled out for offside by VAR. And I think then the game changed. And truthfully, Henderson made, I counted, 5 or 6 genuinely good big saves to keep us in the game. And then the calamity continues. Lerma substituted early for concussion after a clash of heads with Malik Thiaw. Apparently he's all okay now, but I'd be surprised if he plays in the game on Wednesday. And then after that, that was what I believe, when Lerma came off, I believe that was the start of it all going a little bit wrong for us. The system kind of fell apart. If that makes sense. And also, Lerma's one of the ones that does get up and head the ball, deals with these danger crosses. And he's, when you take him out and Munez and Richards and all the other people that normally get us out of trouble, we're in trouble. Anyway, first goal, obviously, that hit the crossbar from a set piece. The Quad headed it away, and then the ball was then played back in. And obviously, then, as I said, Johnson lost his marker on the back post. 1-0, and then 7 minutes later, a corner went in from close range. And like with it, 7 minutes of madness, 2 set pieces, you're 2-0 down, and there was no way back for us, really.
No.
And then all we had to do, the only card that Glasner had to play at that point, bearing in mind he made two substitutions he didn't want to make anyway during that game, we had, well, in essence, three academy players that he was like, well, we're 2-0 down, we've got nothing to lose, get the kids on. My only criticism is he waited till 87 minutes, I think, to make that change. I mean, why not give them 20 minutes and try and... Do you know what I mean? We weren't winning it anyway. So, like, you've got a chance.
The thing that struck me about this game and the last game as well, the Spurs game and the Fulham game, like the three Premier League games that I've watched over Christmas with Palace, is just, you can just see it gets to about an hour, and you're pointing it out here anyway, you're saying the same thing, but it gets to about an hour in the game and suddenly everything just drops and dies for Palace. And you can see the players that are tired and things. And like you said, the fact that you've got so many injuries now and things. On Sunday against Newcastle, you know, those two goals, it was 0-0 up until what, 68, 69 minutes, 70 minutes area, I think it was. You know, so you kept them at bay for all that time, and it was a bit of a dead game.
Well.
Yeah, exactly. It was a bit of a dead game. You'd killed them from creating too much. And then lack of concentration, which probably comes from tiredness, and like you said as well, Lerma going off. There's a few different things. And suddenly, you know, click, within a moment, you're 2-0 down, and there's no way back from that point.
We got no one on the bench to bring on, and I think that's the point. And who we did bring on was Rodney, who's an academy graduate. He did play that Coops game and did really, really well, but this was his Premier League debut, so I guess that's, you know, that's a nice
thing. But you can't expect too much for him, can you? So
No. And obviously, two of the other little superstars came on as well, and they did all right, you know. They did all right, and they did inject some pace and did have a couple of chances and things like that. But it was all, I mean, 87 minutes. It's just too late, really. That near open goal from Hughes at the end as well.
Yes.
Just, again, another moment just to sum it all up where you're like, come on, everybody.
I suppose my question to you is, and I think you've sort of almost answered it there, is the problem, obviously you've got injuries, I get that, and you've got players that are really tired, but within the game at the moment, obviously you are now 1 point in your last five games in the Premier League.
Mate, we dropped 10 places. Yeah, we're 14th. Yeah. We were in fourth.
So you've had a real dip, right? So let me just reiterate that. That's 1 point in the last five games. Just wanted to say that again.
Yeah, still only 4 points off of Europe, though.
Yeah,
which is the craziness of
one
of the league.
1 point in the last five games.
Yeah.
So,
did you win a game in December?
My question really is about, are you still creating the chances and not putting them away, which is what you've been talking about most of the season? Or is this period where you've gone through one draw in the last five, that's four losses, is that more that you're just not even creating anymore? There's just nothing.
Neil, do you know what I mean? You're too busy repeating the same thing to have listened to what I said earlier, which was that I think we are creating chances, but we've got problems in both boxes, right? You've got the problem where Mateta's been scoring blanks and we haven't got the backup or the creativity. Saar's smacking them in AFCON at the moment, but not for us. So I think we haven't got the reinforcements up there to convert the chances that we've got going on. And obviously Mateta's had a dip.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think the most obvious situation is if you look at all of our goals from set pieces, five of our last six defeats were all set piece goals.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Obviously, and what I said earlier was we're missing Richards because obviously he's the one that normally gets that first contact with the ball when the ball's come in for set pieces. Saar and Munez are also. Saar is brilliant at defending that back post and has been. Don't get the credit for it because he gets the credit for doing the things he does up front. But he's brilliant at that defending that set pieces at the back. And obviously Munez, he barely leaves anyone standing when he comes anywhere near.
I think we all know that Munez in particular is such a big loss. But when you put it, like you said the other week, when you put that with Saar at the same time, both players on the same side of the pitch, there was such a strong.
It's a whole right side.
Yeah.
Right side's out. Right. And then there's the other part of it, which I only realised, you know, when someone says something, you're like, oh, of course, which is that you take into account that we're still continuing to play the same system and the same approach for set pieces, but with a completely different team and lineup, right?
Yeah, fair point.
So we're playing zonal marking for set pieces and still continuing to do that because obviously in zonal marking, you're saying, I'm going to get to that ball first. I'm taller and I'm bigger and I'm more aggressive than you. And we ain't bigger, taller or more aggressive than anybody else anymore because them players that were playing that system aren't there anymore.
Look, let me be devil's advocate for a moment. And you don't have to answer this. I know you appreciate you don't know the answer, but your thoughts, if Glasner had changed the team a few more times this season, if he'd actually spun the dice a little bit more and actually put some of the players that were less experienced on, now when they're needed, surely they'd be a little bit more versed one, in form, two, possibly understanding how to defend from set pieces better. Do you not think that might be a better no. way of looking at it?
I get the question, but I think you've got to remember that this is, we're talking about Palace, right? We're talking about a team who historically have never won anything, have got, you know, probably a mediocre squad in the Premier League, just as Brighton would have now, right? We are in the middle of the pack, right? Yeah. We don't have a £250 million bench like Newcastle.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
So
I think that's the point, which is that truthfully, I think Glasner's looked around that room and gone, who have I got? And there is, as I said to you earlier, there's five or six players that are on the payroll at the moment, Ahamada, a few of the others that are just non-existent. Yeah. They're playing Premier League 2 or under 21s. So I think that's why we've got the squad depth issues. And again, look at that list. Sarr, Kamada, Munez, Richards, Lerma, Nketiah, Klein. And then everyone forgets, like, Decore was meant to be moving to Liverpool because he was one of the best midfielders in the Premier League. He's been out all season.
Yeah,
and even the players that were starting to come through, like Riyad and Cardinez, they're all non-existent. So, yes, it's just options, mate. Yeah. It's options. And the truth of the matter is that can we get through this period without conceding too many goals for goal difference? Mm. And if we can nick a point in January, I'll take it, which is why the Fulham one, I was like, it's a point.
I get you. And I think you're absolutely right. You get Sarr back, you know, and you get to the end of the January transfer window and everything is finished and you get either new players in or you get, you know, you keep the players that you've got not going out. You get to 24 games played and see where you are at that point. I get your point. I totally do.
And I think the ridiculous thing is, and I saw something on social media that which really made me laugh, which was, Palace in 14th in January, 4 points off of European football, but yet still only X amount of points away from relegation.
Oh, it's crazy. It's crazy.
And it's like, this is what I'm saying, which is, we said this before Christmas, Brighton and Palace will continue to be above each other and below each other because all you need to do is lose a game and you're dropping. And you imagine the amount of money that Palace have just lost in terms of league position, dropping 10 spaces in the league in a period of 2 weeks.
Yeah. No, I totally with you. Look, you're quite right. So you're 14th, just for everyone's point of view now, so you've played 20, you're in 14th place, 27 points.
Yeah.
In 5th place are Chelsea on 31 points.
There you go, 4 points.
So, you know, it's absolutely crazy.
If we'd have won one of them games, if Gay wasn't stood on the line, if all of the, you know, we can talk about this.
I mean, you didn't.
But that's the point, which is we'd be hot on the tails of Chelsea, a point behind them. And it'd be a completely different narrative. It's the finest margins we're ever going to see in the Premier League this season. I genuinely believe that. That final day of the Premier League, anything could happen, mate.
I agree.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first stepfather, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
And talking of anything could happen, did Brighton win a game in December?
No. Fabian Hursler has still not had been successful in the month of December since he's been in British football. So, should we talk about Brighton a little bit, shall we?
It's
only fair,
give
I suppose.
Give me up and tell me about a loss, go on.
Yeah, okay. So, after you lost to Arsenal, we lost to Arsenal, this time in the Premier League.
Well, they're good, aren't they?
They are pretty good, mate. Newsflash.
All you got to do is look at their bench and that'll tell you that.
Oh, wow. So, we played them on the Saturday following the League Cup game. I went to that game. First time I've ever been to the Emirates, by the way.
What did you think of it?
Do you know what?
Big
seats. Yeah, comfy seats. Well, not that I was sitting in one, but I was right at the front. Great atmosphere, I have to be fair. Don't particularly love the singing at the beginning. There's some weird supporter stuff that goes on there. I'm not particularly ultimate for that. But the rest of it, yeah, good experience. Until the kickoff, obviously, it was absolutely fine. So,
what do you think of the halftime food? I thought it was good quality.
It's not bad. Yeah. It's not bad. I totally agree with you
better
there.
Than the palaces.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because it's a new stadium, but it's an old stadium. Like, it's almost 20 years old now, yet it still feels pretty new. And so I was quite impressed by the stadium, you have to be honest. And the game, I'll keep it short, because like you did with your ones, I think, obviously, I'm not expecting anything from those games, really. I think it's just a situation where you sort of, you go and you think, well, you know, maybe, but ultimately, if we lose, there's nothing lost here. There's nothing, you know, there's nothing to worry about in that sense. We were going to lose probably anyway. So, first half, zero XG from Brighton. Not even one opportunity. We were just, the only thing that really was worth noting about the Arsenal game was the fact that we went in there with a three at the back, a five. Back sort of a 3-4-3, maybe you could argue. So we actually had an extra centre back. Coppola came in for a start, two wing backs, etc., etc. But to be honest, we could have had one up front or 10 up front. It wouldn't have made any difference. Arsenal were just excellent. And the only real change that happened was the second half, because we were 1-0 down, made a few changes at half time. And it was much better when Minté came on because there was a way of getting the ball out.
Why didn't he start?
I don't know. It's a quick answer. I don't know. Maybe it's just a changing it around. Knew he had other games to worry about over the Christmas period. We gave it a go for about 20 minutes. Jorginho Rutter really put the thing to bed, though, by scoring an own goal early in the second half, put them 2-0 up. So it was over, really, even when we got the goal back. The most impressive thing, I think, about the whole of that game was we got the goal, and then Arsenal just decided to shut it down. And the ability to just take control of the game and just not give you a chance was quite, you know, if I wasn't supporting the other team, it would be very impressive. Do you know what I mean?
It's just scary. It's terrifying.
It's another level, mate. It really is.
I mean, I think on the game that we played, it's like, and they're making a substitution, you know, Saka's coming on. And you're like, what?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. So look, 2-1, we got a goal. I got a moment to cheer. And 2-1 at Arsenal, not the worst result, if I'm honest.
No.
But the first half was a little disappointing just because we were just non-existent. I think that was the only depressing part of the whole thing. But I did try and keep perspective. It was Arsenal.
It was.
And then we moved on to West Ham, which was the game which I said last week, that's the one really, you know, we've got to get something out of, ideally a win. Can't lose it. If we lose it, that's even more embarrassing.
You had a decent run of games over Christmas.
Yeah.
You have winnable games.
Yeah, I agree. You know, we started off with Sunderland, obviously, before at home. Obviously, the Arsenal game was the one outlier, but then we had West Ham and then Burnley. So, yeah, a West Ham away game. I mean, it was a crazy game. I don't know if you saw it, but
I saw some of the highlights, yeah.
So it ended 2-2, and the thing that frustrated me about the game and the headline for me was more the fact that, again, we're going away to a team that are in a lot of trouble, right?
Hey, they're going down.
Exactly. And you want...
They're awful.
But this is my point.
You can win.
You want it to be toxic. You want them to be horrendous and the crowd to get on top of them. So if you sit tight for 20 minutes and wait for them to really try and score a goal and counterattack against them, you've probably got a great chance. But no, we did our usual, which is let's encamp in their half, push everybody up, including our centre-backs, and lo and behold, they go a goal ahead because we've pushed too far up and Bowen is excellent on the counterattack. So it's this whole Nuno thing, like exactly the same that we did.
You made him look good, mate.
Yeah, it's that's what's frustrating. It's the tactics again. Look, I won't go over it, but the point being that it was a very frustrating watch in the first half. We got ourselves back into it, and we should have been, 2-1 up come for half time, with Welbeck obviously scoring the first penalty, then getting a second penalty and deciding to Panenka it against the crossbar. I mean, if it goes in, great, but also just whack it, mate. Just really hit it. I was going to swear then, but I didn't. It was frustrating. Minté was really good first half, then got absolutely smashed by Tobido. He hobbled off in the second half and didn't play this weekend, by the way, because of it as well. So that was a shame. You're right. You know, it finishes up with a 2-2 draw. Veltman does score to get us back in it, but ultimately, it wasn't good enough. You know, it wasn't a good enough performance. We come away with a point, and the year finished with the six games in December where we played three draws, three losses. And that's, you know...
You're having a go at me about Palace's form.
I am, yeah. I can still have a go at you about your form. It's still terrible, like ours is.
So
ours is terrible too. The only good thing I've got to talk about is the fact that this weekend we did get 3 points. So I can shove that in your face at least. And
with your first team players, yes.
Yes, exactly. Thank you.
What a luxury.
What a luxury it was to have a big squad. So Brighton 2, Burnley 0 this weekend. And I think it was a better than average start to the game. You know, normally we have a terrible first half and then we get better in the game. But we actually played pretty well this game all the way through, I would argue.
But you were playing Burnley.
We were playing Burnley. And I was just about to, literally, I've got the next bullet on here, which is to say, Burnley, oh my God, they're horrendous.
They're so bad.
They're worse than West Ham.
We're playing them this week.
And even though they're higher than West Ham at the moment, they are worse than West Ham. And I think they're worse because... Well, if I go just on this weekend's form, then I would say it was just apathy. It was just nothingness from Burnley. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, there was just nothing there. It was like a training match that we played. And the only chance that they got was because maybe, as always, we lose the ball, we lose concentration. But look, yeah, the headlines for the game, for a start, it's lovely to see Ferdi Kadioglu on one side, sorry, on the left side with Mitoma. The two of them... On that wing is fantastic. So Mitoma gets his first start for the first time since September. That's great to see. It makes such a difference having him on the pitch, obviously. And I would say that the other thing, the big sort of headline for the game was that Babis Kostoulas finally got his first start, 18 years of age, and was playing in the number 9. And I think that was a really good decision, finally, by Fabian Hoesler, because if you're going to rest Welbeck, stop putting Jorginho Rutter in the 9. He's not a 9. He's terrible at it. Leave him in the 10 where he can take on players. Kostoulas, you know what? He was pretty good for his first ever start in the Premier League, 18 years of age. He had the ball in the net after 10 minutes, but it was offside. But it was a really good play from him. Dragged it off the defender, brought it down on his chest, ran into the box, put it away. But he was unlucky. He was like about 3 inches offside.
Still offside, though.
It does still count as offside. You're right. Mm. We did go ahead after 29 minutes. Jorginho this time dribbling into the box. And he got the ball sort of flicked away. Ayari went to have a shot, as he always does. Doesn't hit the target. But it fell to Kostoulas, who passed it off to Jorginho, who put it in the back of the net.
Nice bit of play, though.
It was. It was the least we deserved. You know, it was a good goal. And we should have been at least one up by then. And finally, by half an hour in, we were. And it was fine. I think that the first half sort of... Nothing else really happened. We almost conceded a goal. That was about the only thing that happened. Right near the end of the first half again, Burnley, half chance, because again, Albion switching off in the middle of the park. They let a throw in go, don't really concentrate. And it ends up with a Burnley shot that was terrible because Burnley are terrible. But end of the first half, 1-0 up. And it's like, okay, fine. You know, we'll see how the second half goes. And thankfully, the one thing that did happen when we came on to the second half was that we got a second goal literally straight away, 90 seconds coming off after the whistle.
That's the perfect start.
You know, straight away, you go straight in, and after like 200 shots in December, Ayari finally scores a goal on target, lovely back into the sort of the far post. And it was, you know, it was great, 2-0 up. And to be honest, not much to talk about apart from there's probably three particular moments for the rest of the game. First one being, I think it was about the hour mark, Burnley had their one sort of like big chance of the whole game. And that was from a corner, back post header, beat Verbruggen, sort of looped over Verbruggen. And then Ferdi's actually on the goal line and manages to get his head to it. He hits it against the crossbar.
I saw that.
And I back mean, out.
Again, though, it's like... It's the luck of the draw in all of this stuff, and that fell your way on that one.
Why is that the luck of the draw? He was in the right place.
Well, it was
good defending.
One thing about being in the right place, but how do you know how the ball's going to swing? How do you know which way it's... Do you get what I'm saying? Yeah. All of that kind of... Mate, anything could have happened in that situation. He played the odds well because he was in the right place for it.
Yeah, I agree. And Ferdi was fantastic all game, but it was a great save in that sense to stop us conceding a goal that they didn't really deserve. The other moment that was probably the moment that most of the people in the whole of the ground were waiting for came on 71 minutes. And that was the moment when a substitution happened. Mm-hmm. Pascal Gross returned to Brighton after 18 months away, going to his boyhood club, Borussia Dortmund, where he played in the Champions League. This winter, he's decided he wants to try and get into the World Cup squad for Germany. He's not getting the minutes he wants at Dortmund, so thankfully, he picked up the phone and Tony went, yeah, come on home, mate, come on home. And honestly, the welcome he got was just lovely to see. And I'm really pleased to have him back as well. The only other thing to mention, 84 minutes, De Kuyper hits the post from a great free kick. I don't know if you saw that.
I did
but
see that.
That was a lovely option. Yeah, took it round the wall from the far side and it just hit the stump post. Unfortunately, it was a bit of a shame. But game ends 2-0. Really sort of, really workmanlike performance. Not created loads of chances. We had 15 shots, but only 4 on target against a side that really we probably should have peppered them. You know, we should have had 10 shots on target at least.
Well, I mean, look, they were bad. They've completely lost their identity as a club, haven't they? And they used to have this identity of kind of big, strong defenders. You know, yeah, exactly. And it's like, I don't think even they know quite what they are at the moment. But I think that you did well to get the result you did. You went to work and you got the result.
Yeah.
I just think probably it's kind of what should have happened.
I totally agree. I was saying before the game, right, if you think about our form before this game, I was saying the same thing, that if we hadn't have won, it was a hiding to nothing, because if we hadn't have won against Burnley at home, having had the December that we had had,
Matty Boy could have been in trouble.
He absolutely could have been in trouble. There would have been a hell of a lot more people. And really, in my opinion, it shouldn't make a blind bit of difference that we beat Burnley on the weekend.
No.
Because they weren't great, Brighton. They were okay. You know, they did the passing that they needed to do and they were okay. The main things I would say are, in summary, right, Kurdioglu, still our best player on the pitch.
Mm-hmm.
It's fantastic again. One of the few players that you see actually running into the space that's in front of them, like running with the ball and actually making another defender, another player move out of position because of it. It's something that you don't see enough happening these days. And he does it all the time. As soon as he has the ball, if there is space in front of him, he will gallop into it. And it really worries defenders. And so he was excellent going forward and defending, obviously off the line as well. So really, really good. Really pleased with him. And Kostoulas, I have to mention him again, 18 years of age, showed some really lovely touches, good strength, scored one goal that was offside, but should have probably scored another one in the second half too. Worked really hard, got an assist as well for his first ever start. So I'm really pleased for him. Go on, what are you laughing at?
No, I'll just say, yeah, I don't think, if we could actually go through all of the podcasts since your man from Greece signed, see whether you've actually said his name without mentioning the fact that he's 18.
That'd be Kostoulas, yeah.
Because obviously it's like Kostoulas, 18 years old. It's almost like he's his second name.
Because he's 18, Andy.
No, I know. But look, mate, score 20 goals a season, then crack on about the fact that he's 18, and it's all good.
Okay. Well, as we're talking about age, there was one other point I wanted to make, right? At the end of the game, by the time the final whistle came, on the pitch, we had Joel Veltman, 33, Lewis Dunk, 34, Pascal Gross, 34, Welbeck, 35, and James Milner, the day before his 40th birthday, all on the pitch, 5 very experienced players that we managed to keep a clean sheet and had no dramas through the game at all. And even at the West Ham game, Milner played, Veltman played. Veltman coming into the side has lowered the amount of goals that we've conceded, 100%. And just the experience of those 5 players on the pitch on Saturday, I think really helped the decrease of any dramas, of any frustration or anything. We just killed the game. And the one extra thing that I would say is having Pascal Gross back now, having him in a forward position where he is so good at being able to find the space and pass the ball and keep play moving in a positive way, I think will have a positive effect on the side. I'm not expecting miracles though, and you know, I'm not going to get carried away. We were not great in December. I'm not happy with the way that we played. We were awful in times, right? One win against a very poor side does not make it, from my point of view.
It could be the turning point, mate.
You say that, but then next up, Man City at the Etihad.
I think you've got Man City and then Man United,
yep,
who are going to get their nice new manager bounce.
Yep. Yeah. So, look, One win, two draws in our last five games, which on paper doesn't look too bad, but trust me, mate, it's not been pretty.
But your one win did chuck you up the table, though, didn't it?
It did, yeah. So we've ended, week match, 20, wasn't it? So week match 20, we've decided that we have finished in 10th position, 28 points, 1 point again, above Palace. So therefore, we are only 3 points away from Champions League place, which is just crazy at the moment.
It's literally insane.
It is, really is. All right, see you all.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
After the break.
Welcome back, Neil.
Thank you, mate. Welcome to you.
Feel like we need to talk about more positive things than our dismal form over Christmas.
Oh, what's that?
Well, I mean, Man United is still having a nightmare.
Yeah, it's not all bad. And Chelsea.
And Chelsea.
Yes, I...
I mean, I don't feel like there's been that many sackings this year.
It's been pretty quiet. I mean, Obviously the Nottingham Forest fun, that's been good fun. And Celtic have done the same thing, the Nottingham Forest. They're going to be on their third manager.
He didn't win a game, did he, in six?
No, he didn't. No. So, so first was Chelsea. They sacked Maresca.
Yeah.
I say sacked. I think they left on mutual terms, but I think it was all very much... Apparently, the word on the street is because Maresca's people were already talking to other clubs about next year and things, possibly Juventus, possibly Man City. So, that looks like Liam Senior coming in. Yeah.
Which is interesting because only last week was he one of the favourites to take the Palace job, should that
Liam Senior?
Yep.
Really?
True story. Being linked with from a lot of the big sites and a lot of the gambling sites, he was second or third on the list.
I suppose if you think about it, he'd probably be top of the list on most things because he's such a wanted manager. He's doing so well, you know. And at the moment that Chelsea sacked Maresca, you knew it was going to be him, though, most probably, because he's part of Blue Co already.
But also, I don't know, as a Chelsea fan, having all of them world-class managers over the years, it feels like a little bit of a fall from grace. But then, of course, you look at it and go, I mean, look at the Bayern Munich job. I mean, he was a pretty much no one in terms of managerial status. Yeah. So I guess gamble. Maybe that's, fair play. I mean, they're the best club in the world, mate, apparently.
Yeah. I mean, it's not that much of a gamble. If you think about it, it's very in keeping with Chelsea at the moment. There was a tweet from, it was from Tom on X, right? And this made me laugh so much because there was a picture on the weekend of Liam Rossini being seen at an airport on his way, basically, over to London and stuff. And this just made me really chuckle. He wrote this. He wrote, ex-Brighton defender Liam Rossini and ex-Brighton technical director David Weir en route to negotiate a move with ex-Brighton head of recruitment Paul Withstanley and Brighton's successor Sam Jewell. All of this to manage a team with five ex-Brighton players. Fascinating model.
Brilliant.
It's like literally like, all the Brighton ex technical directors and everything are going to be talking to themselves now. It's just ridiculous. It really is what they've done to this club. But the other one to go, yes, you're quite right. As of time of recording, he went today. Ruben Amorim left Man United.
Yeah.
Are you getting worried, Andy? Are they going to come for Oliver?
Well, do you know what? I question whether he's the man they want.
So do I. Yeah.
But also, I feel like, the bookies are telling me that he's the favourite for the job. He's 2-1 at the moment.
Really?
And for most of them. So that's a thing. And I think that if I'm Man United right now, I've tried to do a few different things over the years, right? We've tried various different things, neither of which have worked to get them back to where they're going. I feel like what Man United need is results, stability, a strong system.
But that's theoretically a strong system is what you were going to get with Amorim. But he was so fixed to it without the right player.
It just didn't work, did
very
it?
Strange.
And I think that's the point, which is I think that the squads that Man United have got
does actually work under a Glasner.
Well, it does, yeah.
Under Glasner management, so he's not too far from that style.
But is he attacking enough for what the Man United fans? Because even the Man United fans didn't like Amorim because he weren't attacking enough.
You look at the. I mean,
it's what they're used to. Though,
I mean,
isn't it?
I know you won't agree with me as a Brighton fan. If you ignore our recent run of form, which is very unlike Palace in the last couple of years. And you look at the exciting way that Glasner did change the style of play, the counter-attacking, the wings, all the other bits and pieces that we did. Yeah. It is actually a good watch for football when we've got a proper team playing it.
You don't have to convince me. I'm just saying that I don't think Man United fans would be convinced with Oliver Glasner turning into their manager.
I think Man United fans will look at Oliver Glasner and go, he's a winner.
Yeah,
and he's performed wonderful things. And there is times in football where managers come along almost out of nowhere and they perform miracles and they're seen as the next messiah. I believe that Glasner is that man at the moment, which is what scares the hell out of me. There are still a lot of the Palace faithful that are hanging on in there thinking if he gets a good January transfer window, he still might hang on. I've got a feeling, because there's been rumours about Glasner going to Man United for a while.
I mean, if you want my take on it, right, I think at this precise moment in time, Man United would be more sensible, unless they want to throw more money at things, which, let's be honest, they've spent a ridiculous amount. I saw something online earlier saying they've spent over £100 million on their managers and severance pays and stuff since Ferguson left.
You know, I'm assuming they're paying that. It's like, a bit like Chelsea, you know, they're still paying for the managers they sacked before the match.
That's right, it's a ridiculous amount of rubbish that they've sent, you know, over the years. But if they want to save themselves a little bit of money and wait, you've got Glasner at the end of the summer out of contract. You've got another one, which I think would be a better fit, which is Iraola out of contract from Bournemouth, which I think would be a very good option for them, from the fans' point of view, to see something. And there's a few others as well. I don't know. I wonder whether
Xavi
they might...
Well, I think, is available.
Who?
Xavi?
Yes. Yeah, he's available now. Yeah, good point. So...
He's one of the other ones that's up there. But I don't think Man United would sniff at paying Glasner's got 6 months left on his contract. Good I don't point. Imagine yeah. it to be a great amount of money.
No,
but I mean,
point.
A lot of the Palace fans were clinging on to the fact that it's good timing that it's happened now as opposed to the end of the season kind of thing. I don't think it's going to make too much of a difference to Man United. But
we will see, we will see.
Let's see what happens, mate.
So before we talk about the next fixtures that are going to be happening midweek, so you might be listening to this and it might be a bit out of date. But before we do that, let's have a little natter about transfers. Now I say a natter about transfers, but actually I haven't got anything from a Brighton point of view really. I've got a couple
you
of things
everyone in the summer mate.
Well yeah, but they're still not got enough good enough, but
there's no more teenagers left in Greece.
Palace, obviously this should be a busy window. You've already bought one player for I believe your record transfer.
Yeah, we made a statement, Neil. Statement.
I'm not sure.
Auld Lang Syne was just finished singing and Brennan Johnson rocks up at Selhurst Park. Did call it, by the way, in the podcast before
you
last.
Did.
And really, really weird about the fact that Armstrong, ex-Palace player from, what, 90s?
90s, yeah.
Who is unprolific on X and social media, literally posts nothing apart from a couple of family pictures and, you know, what it didn't try to get involved in any of that stuff.
Yeah.
Tweeted it a good 2.5 weeks ago and said, done deal.
Well, I would imagine that's probably because him and Brennan Johnson's father, I think, used to play together. So they might still be friends and might have got the inside track.
And also the fact that I would assume that he'd probably keep in touch with Brighty and a few of the others.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, really, really interesting. But
well,
I think
you
look,
called it too, so well
it's,
done.
It's a good look. It's a great transfer for us. I think I like the fact that we've spent more than the customary £10 to £12 million that we spend on players. It is our record transfer fee. 4.5 year deal as well, which is good to see. And look, let's put this into perspective. Johnson was Tottenham's top scorer last year.
He was,
with 18 goals, right?
Yeah,
and he scored that winner in the Europa League final.
Yeah.
So, like, this is a good player in a position that we need someone. Obviously, he is... at the moment, playing for Sarr, who is AFCON.
As soon as I saw the headlines with Brennan Johnson, I thought to myself, yeah, that's the Sarr and Johnson, those two They're like for like in that sense. They're very fast, very direct. Johnson, having watched him a bit, he doesn't do much else apart from run fast and, though, most importantly, scores goals.
He does score goals. I think the only thing we've got to watch with him is what happened at the weekend, which is that he's got to track back, he's got to stick to his man, because obviously the system fault.
The interesting thing will be that he's signed, and as you pointed out, a 4.5-year deal. He's signed, and he's had a conversation with Glasner, and he's still signed.
Well, this is a good point, Neil, which I'm glad you made, because the media was making a big deal of this, which was that he was meeting on Thursday last week with Glasner.
Oh, right.
And to, you know, to talk about the deal, because the deal was done subject to him agreeing.
Sure, yeah.
Was the news. And I question whether Brennan Johnson would join Crystal Palace if he thought that Glasner was off somewhere else. I just don't know. Let's see.
Maybe it might be that, but it might also be that he has an idea of what the next manager might be as well, you know, because if you might have a plan like that as well. So the concern would be for me is that you are buying a player for a lot of money for Palace, you know, it's a lot of money, and he fits a certain style of play. So for your sake, you better, as a Palace board, you better get a manager in that's going to play a similar style, because otherwise all of your players are going to be struggling.
Yeah, but I think we will stick with this style, because I feel like that's now going to become our new identity, isn't it? That's what we've been most successful doing. And I think we'd be stupid to go back to the Roy way of doing things or anyone else.
Any other news?
Only some kind of fringe news, I guess is probably the way to say it.
Fringe news.
Mustafa, who a lot of the Palace fans probably don't even know who he is, to be fair. He's been out on loan. He's attacking midfield, a 19-year-old.
Yeah.
He was out at Nuremberg in Germany.
Right.
But he didn't make a single appearance on that loan. So he's basically come back, and we shall see what happens with him. He hasn't been recalled. He's been sent back, if that's what you said. As we haven't said come back.
Yeah.
It's one of them. He ain't done nothing wrong. It's just not worked.
Hasn't worked, yeah. Okay.
And then Ahamada, who was signed in 2023 from Stuttgart for 10 million, Neil, we paid for him. Right. This kid was at Juventus's academy, and it was like next big thing, all this kind of stuff.
It's a lot of money for a kid.
Yeah, and he did play a little bit under Hodgson at the time, but never set the world on fire, and was quite frustrating to watch, actually. Just, I don't know how to describe it. You know, like when a player comes on and you're like, you didn't do badly, but what did you do? Do you know what I mean? Did the stuff.
Okay.
And you played the football.
So what's happened to him?
Well, he's set to sign for French side Auxerre.
Okay.
And because he's actually been out on loan in Rennes last season, but I didn't realise this. I thought he was still out on loan. He ain't. He's still at the club, and he's played no first team football at all this season, not even been sat on the bench. Which is a complete mystery to me.
That's strange, isn't
right?
It?
So you look at our problems that we've got.
Yeah, exactly. It goes back to your point earlier.
There's a fielder there who's doing nothing.
Taking up the wages.
Good money as well.
Yeah, yeah.
He's got 6 months left in his contract. But
okay.
We've agreed, this is the weird thing about this, we've agreed a free transfer with a sell-on clause.
Yeah.
So we spanked 10 million quid on this kid, sent him out on loan, didn't work, he's come back, and then we're willing to let him go for free to get him off the payroll with the hope that we'll get a sell-on fee
later on down the line. That's not a bad deal, though, in some respects. That's quite clever doing it that way, because you know you've got to sell him. You know you've got to get him off the wage bill. You might as well do that, because otherwise you're not going to get any money for him anyway in that sense. If he's not played, there's more of a problem, because you're not getting a price for him. No one can see him. Everyone's going, well, if he's not good enough for you, why would we want him sort of thing? You
and
know,
he's so. Taken up a spot for a midfielder. Yep. Talking about midfielders at the moment, so I think he'll go out and one will come in.
Yeah, okay.
Because he won't be seen as a loss, if that makes sense, because he's already not there.
Okay.
And then the only other things I've got is Henderson, apparently has been reported that he's in talks over a new contract.
Right.
The club are concerned that potentially there might be an exodus.
Right.
So they want to try and tie him in.
Yeah.
I think pay him what he wants and get him to sing Waka Waka as many times as he wants.
Yeah.
So
I agree.
So hopefully, I don't see any reason why he would want to move on. I really don't, because he's got first team football. He's England's number two, knocking on the door at the moment.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I think a keeper at Palace is one of the perfect clubs to play at. And I'll tell you why, because we've won stuff. and we're competing at stuff, or have been, but also we're not a Man City or an Arsenal or any of the big clubs where, as a keeper, you're going to stand there doing nothing all day. You've got a chance to pull off some of them big saves because we do select some goals in.
Yeah, I mean, like any player, the only reason you would move is if you feel you're going to go up, i.e. you're going to get play bigger games, more important games. He's already playing for England. He's most likely going to be the next England goalkeeper whenever that happens. And the only thing that will probably tempt him away is Champions League football, let's be honest. That's about it. And that's quite a small list of teams that will take him. So anybody else? Oh, I can see you on the notes here. You've mentioned Mateta. Is that a definite that his contract is not being renewed? Has that been confirmed? Or
no,
is that just a rumour?
Well, supposedly, he's rejected a new contract.
Right.
And is talking to people, which is really funny because it's the same sort of time that news came out was when he stopped scoring goals.
So when does his actual contract end? Is it this summer?
No, I think it's the end of next summer.
Ah, okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah,
I think so it's the end of next summer.
They have talks now to then try and sign him up before he has 1 year left. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And obviously, I think Man United, funny enough, is the ones that have been sniffing around him a lot and a few of the other clubs. But I'm not too concerned about that one. But Gahey's the one that's been in the press for the last 24 hours a lot again. And the reason this time is because, do you remember we had this chat about him? And I said about that I don't think you basically said about the fact it was £30 million bid from Liverpool or whatever that we turned down. Mm. You were like, that's only going to get less the nearer it will, you know, because of the contract.
Sure.
And I thought, no, hang on, he's in demand. Like, and bearing in mind that he can now talk to Real Madrid, Barcelona, Bayern Munich, Atletico Madrid, who all want him, all the biggest names in football. Mm. But now, as of today, Man City seem to be the front runners for him and are rumoured to be about to put a bid in for about 35 million quid. They try and tempt him away.
They've got a couple of injuries, haven't they?
They've
just had them. So it would make sense for them as well. It's a good option. And Liverpool might have to hurry up because you might get lucky here and get a bidding war going.
And I genuinely think that will be the case because they'll know that he's talking to some of the biggest clubs in the world. And for 35 million quid, I mean, and let's be honest, who does not want Gahey? Right?
No, I agree. I think, like you say, any money you can get now, what would you do? What from your point of view, what would you, because I asked you right at the beginning of the summer, I'll ask you again now, what would you prefer? 35 million in the back pocket for Palace or Gahey stays a whole season?
Are we actually going to spend that 35 million though? Right, to 35 mil now.
Yeah, okay.
But the problem is, we've got to get someone else in.
Yeah. As always.
And got to do it quick. And that was why I was hoping that actually it wouldn't have been Brennan Johnson was the first signing of the summer. I was hoping it was going to be a couple of good defenders so that we actually had a plan here. But let's see what happens. I think Gahey will go. And I also think potentially that we'll see another big exit because, I mean, Wharton apparently is being linked quite heavily.
I think Wharton is the one that I still can't see him going now. I can see him going, if Palace play their cards right, and he goes to the World Cup, it makes sense for Palace to keep hold of him as long as possible until after the World Cup. Because when he comes back from the World Cup, if he goes, which I'm presuming he will, if he stays fit, all that sort of stuff, you can't argue he will be one of the stars of the World Cup if he plays. Because you just know it. You just can see it. And especially in a World Cup that's hot and humid. Someone who can keep control of the ball, pass it accurately. He doesn't sprint around. He's not a fast runner in that sense. He's not someone that runs miles. I just think if Palace play their cards right, you're quite right. 100 million plus next summer is the option.
Yeah, problem with that is, Neil, that some of the biggest clubs in the world that anyone would dream of playing for are whispering in his ear right now.
Yeah,
and I think this is the issue. And the worse our form is getting, the more worried I am of people getting picked off.
Yep.
And if Glasner goes, then you start worrying about the whole project. And again, put it all into perspective without backtracking. You put it all into perspective with all of this stuff. Mm. We've come back on the back of our most successful ever year, and that this is a moment in time of survival mode where we've got to keep our stuff together, basically, whilst we haven't got any players, and hope and pray that the club can have a really successful January transfer window and spank in 35 million quid on a decent player on the second day of the transfer window, I think is a good start.
I agree.
It shows intent.
I agree.
Fingers crossed.
From a Brighton point of view, I haven't really got anything to talk about as much. The obvious news, which I already spoke about, that every Brighton fan will appreciate by now because he played on Saturday, is Pascal Gross returning. It was a wonderful little pick-me-up on New Year's Eve when we got the news out.
Was there any hint of that beforehand?
There was a little whisper about 4 or 5 days, like literally around Christmas Day time, but it wasn't much. And then suddenly out of the blue, Fabrizio was the one that obviously when he does it, you're like, what the hell? And that was New Year's Eve. So literally, it was kept relatively quiet. It's wonderful for us to get him back. Obviously, he's 18 months older. He's not going to last forever. He signed I think it's an 18-month, two-year contract just to see him through the next season. But it will make a big difference. It already lifted the crowd. And I think that's a nice thing for us. I think we needed something. In the sense of the rest of the window, on a personal level, I really hope we go out there and we spend a little bit of money on a striker, on an actual goal scorer. I don't think we desperately need anything else. Yes, of course, I always want more like any fan does. But if we could spend money on an actual striker who's strong, who's can put the ball in the back of the net, who can sniff out chances, that would be great. Speaking of strikers, the only other news is that there are whispers that the season-long loan for Evan Ferguson at Roma may come to an end. Roma are thinking, contemplating what to do because he's not scoring loads of goals. He's scored 3, I think, but he's not getting lots of opportunity out there. The option is for them to cancel the loan to essentially and give him back so that they can free up a space to buy another player or something. So I think that's something in our ring at the moment. So we may see Evan Ferguson back. If we do, I still don't expect him to play for Brighton. I think they'll try and either loan him out or sell him. So that's the downside to that. So we'll have to wait and see. But otherwise, not many other rumours. A little rumour about an odd winger here or whatever. But that's the normal sort of business that Brighton do anyway, just sniffing out young kids to try and actually sign them up before anyone else does. For me, it's trying to get a striker, but there's no real news out there at the moment.
It's still quite early on, isn't it?
Very early. So let's talk about fixtures then before we finish up.
I mean, by the time that most people listen to this, we've probably got spanked by Villa and got 4 more injured
players. I was going to ask you about this, right? So you've got on Wednesday night, well, I've got Brighton have got Man City at the Etihad away. You've got a home fixture to Villa.
Yeah.
But didn't you say before that you've always played well against Villa? You always beat them?
Yeah, normally.
So isn't this a good thing that you're playing Villa? Like, in the sense of, like, confidence, surely you always beat Villa, Andy?
We normally do. But we've normally got Sarr, who's normally the one that sticks the dagger in.
Yeah, I mean, and Villa are playing well at the moment, aren't they?
Villa are playing well. I think they've got 4 or 5 out, injured and things like that for this game. Obviously, we've got our 11 that are injured, not to start. So, to be brutally honest, I just don't know what's going to happen.
Because,
again, you look at some of the previous games that we've played and you've gone, given the situation that we're actually in, you go, actually, we're doing all right. We're doing all right. I think the gods have just got to shine down on us and give us a little bit of a helping hand.
Well, hopefully not.
We just need a little bit of luck on our side, I think.
Come on, Villa.
Go 1-0 up and I think we get that confidence back at home. Because this little losing streak we've been on, it's weird walking out of Selhurst Park with that
what
just happened there? Palace fans do not like that.
Well, listen, mate, we played Villa, as you remember, three weeks ago. They were absolutely amazing.
They're great.
This is going to be, if Villa turn up, I mean, you could get spanked here. You really could. They are so good at the moment.
And as it stands at the moment, there is absolutely a chance that could happen.
Yeah.
But again, you just don't know which Palace are going to turn up either.
I agree.
And if we can, all I could say is if Glasner and the set piece coach can put a new system in place and we can work out exactly what's going on. If you take out set pieces, that we would have had 5 draws or 5 wins out of them last 5 games.
I was looking at that. There was a stat on Match of the Day, and I think it was something like 51% of all of your goals conceded this season have been through set pieces.
I saw that same stat. Yeah,
like that's crazy, isn't it? Absolutely crazy.
For a team that I think was second only to Liverpool, I think, last year on set pieces.
52%, that's it. So goals conceded 23 and then 12 from set pieces. Unbelievable, really.
Yeah.
Right, well, look, I'm not going to bother predicting Man City Brighton. Man City are going to win that one, obviously. Then we move over to the weekend and it's the FA Cup. The love of the FA Cup. This gives you a bit of a break. Come on, this is, you literally lucked out here. Come on, Saturday. I think it's the early kickoff, 12:30. I think it is. You've got Macclesfield.
Yeah, we have got something to lose though. The FA Cup.
You won't lose it against Macclesfield, mate. Come on.
Well, to be fair, you never know at the moment. I'm intrigued here. I'm really intrigued here as to quite what Glasner's going to do. Bearing in mind, it's only 3 days after the Villa game.
As in, like, who he'll play?
Well, is he going to do that thing that he did in the Conference League where he goes 11 changes? Yes. I just don't know. And then you do 11 changes, Neil, and you could quite easily get beaten by Macclesfield. So this is what I'm trying to say. It's not quite as simple as everyone's looking at, but I am really looking forward to it because I love the FA Cup. And it's the first time we've ever played an FA Cup game as holders as well. So
I think the thing is, when you play a non-league side, and they are, I mean, what I think they're, hang on, let's see, they're 15th currently in the Northern League, as it were. So they are proper low-down league. You should be able to play a lot of your exciting kids that played against cups and things like that.
And Drake Thomas and all the others.
You should still do all right.
Oh, mate, we should. I'm only joking. We should beat them, but anything can happen at the moment. What was lovely, though, was that in the press last week, it came out that Palace have agreed to donate all of the ticket sales to Macclesfield.
Oh, good. That's nice.
Which I thought was a really nice touch.
It is, and I appreciate that. It's one of the good things about your club, a bit like Brighton, is that they don't forget where they come from, and they realise that the lower league teams really need the dosh. So that's really good news.
Yeah.
Brighton are on Sunday afternoon, 4:30 kickoff. That beautiful slot for all the Brighton fans going up there on a Sunday evening. There's one train they've got to run for to get home in time before there's no more trains. So as you can tell, when I looked at the tickets, there's still some available and they're offering like 15 loyalty points. So for anyone that Albion knows how that works, when they offer the loyalty points, that's quite high for an away game. So they're trying to get people to go along, but it's on TV as well, obviously. And we'll be playing someone's Manchester United. I don't know who will be in charge. I think it's going to be Darren Fletcher, the technical director, as it were, used to play for them, so he's in charge at least for this week. So we will see. New manager bounce, they'll probably be fantastic. They'll play the wingers, probably bring Scholes and Giggs on or something.
I think you're going to get a double spanking from Manchester.
I think you're absolutely right, mate. Honestly, that's the sort of thing everyone looks at that and goes, oh great, you know, they're in turmoil. They're not in turmoil, are they? Amorim's been horrendous, and now they're going to get a Manchester United great to take over for the week, and they're all going to be smiles, they're going to be in fun, he's going to change the formation, it's going to be like 5-0 or something stupid.
Imagine next week's podcast, double spanking from Manchester teams, Palace lose to Aston Villa and get kicked out by Macclesfield. Can we actually not do next week if that
well
happens?
Speaking of next week, we will be a little later. We'll be back on probably the Wednesday. It'll go out eventually because we've got other things going on next week. I'm away. I'm going to Tenerife. Did I tell you?
Tenerife.
I've got a Tenerife for my
Brits
birthday.
Abroad.
Yeah, look.
Nice. Nice.
It's not Costa Brava, no. But yeah, looking forward to that. And a bit of warmth out of this -2 that it's currently today.
We had snow today.
I know, it's beautiful out there.
Actually, do you know what? Completely unfootball related.
Yeah.
I've lived here in Worthing, in this road, for 11 and a half years or something.
Yeah.
And not once when it snowed in Worthing. Right, and it only snows in Worthing every now and again.
Yeah, I agree.
But once has it ever settled to that extent?
No, it was proper snow this morning.
The kids walked to school in the snow this morning. It was lovely.
It was lovely.
For those of you listening, you don't get much snow down by the sea.
We really don't.
Because it's salt. So, and we turned into a science lesson now.
Geography. Look at that, lovely. Well, look, that's it for the first episode of 2026 for Seagull Eagle. Thanks for listening.
Make sure you follow the show so you don't miss the next episode when it drops. We'll be back next week to review Brighton's dismal performances at the Manchester clubs and Palace's brilliant win at Aston Villa.
And the loss to Macclesfield. You can find us on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook and X. Just search Seagull Eagle and get the conversation started.
Or drop us an email at seagulleaglepodcast@gmail.com to find out where Knacklesfield is that Neil just said.
Damn, I thought I got away with it. We'll be back next week.
Seagulls!
Eagles!
Come on, Man United.
It's back.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner. so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.